Speaking on this program is Brother Ron Causby.
I want you to turn to Job 12, beginning in verse 7 through verse 9, and read with me what Job has to say concerning what God has made. And what he has to say shows us yet again that God is the designer, the architect of what we see around us. In Job 12:7, "But ask now the beast, and they will teach thee, and the fowls of the air, they shall tell thee. Or speak to the earth, and it shall teach thee. Or to the fishes of the sea, they shall declare unto thee." Now look at verse 9. "Who knoweth not in all of these things that the hand of the Lord hath wrought this?" Now for those who are students of the session or the study, I want to call your attention to find two illustrations that will illustrate the beast of the field, the fowl of the air, the earth, and fishes. In our class, we're going to basically discuss verse 7, the beast and the fowls. But now notice what the beast, the fowl, the earth, and the fishes declare and tell and show. In verse 9, it says, "Who knoweth not in all of these things?" Now, he's not saying you cannot know. He's saying, who is it that fails to see? Who knoweth not? Who fails to see that the hand of the Lord made this, created this, caused this, and it was the Lord God Almighty, the great I Am, Yahweh, that made these things? Calling upon the name of God in this text, or showing that it was Jehovah, shows the power behind it. Just like you can see the power and the awe-inspiring and the marvelousness behind the human body, you can see the same power behind, for instance, the beast of the field. First of all, I'll call your attention to the horses. Most people love to see a horse. They, at one time or another, have ridden a Shetland pony or had their picture taken on a horse, grandpa, grandma, around the farm. And they may have noticed as they were driving along, like a couple of friends traveling up into the mountains, they were being very quiet so as not to disturb the various animals, and they might be able to sneak up or come close to what was going on in the area by the animals. They rounded the bend, and before them was a horse standing with his eyes shut. And he was solid. He was still. He was asleep. They slowly walked toward him so that they wouldn't wake him. And when they got so close, his eyes opened, he saw him, and he bolted backwards. Now the question is, how can this big, many-pound, hundreds of tons, well, maybe not that big, how can this big horse stand there without falling over? Well, what happens is the joints in his knees lock. And since they lock, then he's balanced. And he can sit there and sleep all day. Now, whenever he lifts his paw, it unlocks. And that's what he did when he bolted. He lifted his paw, or his legs, his hoofs, and was able to take off. Now, when you look at birds, you see that they have tendons in their legs that causes the feet to curl around the limb. And by locking in that way, they're able to hang on without falling off. Now, bats, you may recall that they hang upside down. And you ask yourself, how in the world can a bat, when he goes to sleep and he relaxes, what keeps him from falling? The same concept as in the horse and as in the bird. His legs lock, or his feet, or what he has, locks, so that the only time that they'll unlock is whenever he releases. Now you, I don't know whether you've had an uncle do this to you, but bring home some Chinese handcuffs. Now what you're supposed to do is take this little weaved circle tube and put your fingers in each end, and then you pull your fingers out. Now old Unc, he'll pull your fingers apart and tighten the little Chinese handcuffs around your fingers. Now, if you don't realize it, then you'll sit there and try to pull your fingers out, and every time you pull, it gets tighter and locks your fingers into it. All you have to do is push inward. Pull one finger out, Pull the other finger out because you've loosened it. That's the same concept that God built into the tendons and the feet and the legs of the various animals that we've discussed. Now, that couldn't have just happened. Those animals were created that way. And you can see the design in them. Call your attention to a giraffe. How does a giraffe get blood to his head? Now, here's a giraffe that stands 12 feet in the air. And they tell me that there are 62.4 pounds to the cubic foot of pressure. So every foot you go up, that's 62 pounds. Well, by the time you reach 12 feet high, you have a half a ton per square foot bearing down on that animal. How is blood able to pump up against that type of pressure? In the giraffe's neck are a series of valves, one-way valves. So when the blood pumps up, it locks and doesn't fall back through. And he's able to get blood to the head. But wait a minute. When this mini-toned giraffe bends his head over for a drink of water, what keeps that blood from rushing down and knocking him out? Well, again, it's the design that God has given this 12-foot giraffe. So that whenever the blood comes pouring down to the top of his head, it doesn't knock him out. It doesn't kill him, pounding his brain, but instead is able to flow as it's supposed to. Looking back at Job 12, not only does Job discuss the beast of the field, but he turns his attention to the fowl of the air. He says, "Ask them, they'll tell thee, they'll demonstrate it to you, they'll show it to you, that it's God that made them." Well, let's look at a few of them. First of all, the woodpecker. Four American researchers had discovered the design for the perfect helmet. Now, you may recall, if you're as old as some, that years ago the helmet was canvas. Roger Staubach remembers what an old helmet was like. He was knocked unconscious, as a matter of fact, because of the concussions that he undertook or had to undergo or suffered. He had to quit football, a great, great quarterback. Well, these researchers began to research how to make a better helmet. Now, they understood that they needed a helmet that could withstand 425 pounds per square inch in order to protect the human skull. However, when you have a human being hurdling his body at 300 pounds and hit another man, it all is impacted in a small area, too small, and it quadruples the impact and causes the concussion. So they had to spread this 300 pounds coming at you. They had to spread it out over not just one square inch, but over 20 square inches, and thus the impact would be 425 pounds per square inch or less. Now, where did they go? They admittedly, the scientists, that is, admittedly tell you that they borrowed the design. They borrowed the design from the woodpecker. The woodpecker is able to peck on wood, and when he does, there's a tremendous impact on the little fella's head. And so these scientists studied and recognized that here was the perfect football helmet, and it was before them for thousands of years and had been in use. It was the so-called ultimate, as they called it, impact-absorbing helmet, and it came from God's woodpecker. Another bird. And by the way, every bird could be discussed. There's something particular. Or should we say there are several things particular about every bird, every kind of bird. But I call your attention to a second kind, and that would be the white-throated warbler. Now, the white-throated warbler bears their young in Africa. And at the end of summer, they bear their young in Germany. And then at the end of the summer, they fly to Africa without their young. Without the newborns. Now, a couple of weeks later, the newborn follows mom and dad to Africa and finds them. Now, I can just hear Mom and Dad Warbler talking to little Tykes. And they'd say, now what you want to do is go down to Hammerstein's farm and turn to the left. And whenever you reach the big oak tree, we'll turn back to the right. And when you come to Smith Junction, well, take your guess. No, that's not what he's done. But instead, God, the great designer, has designed within the little white-throated warbler his ability to find Mom and Dad through latitude and longitude within the little bird. And so he finds his directions from God. Now you have to ask yourself, is that design or accident? If you say accident, I'm wondering what accident you've been in. I say that jokingly. But we must understand that these things could be multiplied by the hundreds, yea, by the thousands, and each one of them in and of themselves show complex organs, intricate design, and the only way you can have intricate design, complex organ, is for there to be a intelligent architect, designer, and that would be God. Well, we need to call your attention to the earth, another kind of animal that walks upon this earth. Well, let's look at the grunting turtle. Now, some may want to say grunting turtle. Now, this turtle seems to be smarter than a lot of fishermen. This turtle is able to put his legs out, and he starts wobbling back and forth. Pretty soon, one side of his shell is hitting the ground with a bang. And then the other side hits the ground with a bang. And it gets into a rhythm. Bang, bang, bang. And about 10 or so minutes later, worm after worm after worm starts crawling out of the earth. And old grunting turtle just walks around and starts eating. Now, I am 50-some-odd years old. And I did not know that the grunting turtle could do that, nor did I know that you could get worms that way. It would be interesting to take your class and say, how many of you knew that you could put a rhythmic sound upon the ground and worms would become crawling up? Now, I know that some know that because they've stuck steel stakes into the ground and they've done the same kind of rhythmic sound and worms, sure enough, have come up. But how many human beings know that? Did you know that every grunting turtle knows that? Not just one or two, not just a couple, not some that studied it. Every single grunting turtle knows a rhythmic sound beating on the ground, especially after rain, will give him and get him supper. Now, I hate to admit it, but that grunting turtle's smarter than I am. No, he's not smarter. No one taught him that. That is instinct. And God put that instinct within that turtle. Well, let's turn to another one. We'll call this fellow Beetle Bailey. Now, Beetle Bailey is a bombardier beetle. And in the bombardier beetle, on the right side is a chamber. And on the left side is a chamber. What goes in those chambers? Well, now, if I told you hydrogen peroxide and hydroquinone, would you know what I'm talking about? I would not until I studied this. I didn't know. What is going to happen? What will happen when you place hydrogen peroxide and hydroquinone together? You get an explosion. Well, now, you would think that a beetle wouldn't know that. But the bombardier beetle knows it. Now, the bombardier beetle places both of these chemicals in the same chamber. Well, that doesn't sound very smart. That'd explode. No, he knows that. And so he places an inhibitor that prevents them from mixing and exploding. And then in the other side, he's got a what they call an anti-inhibitor. It works on the inhibitor and allows the two chemicals to mix. And whenever they do mix, there is a 212 degree plus explosion. Well, let's put it all together. Here you have on one side the three chemicals and on the other side the anti-inhibitor. A prey is following after the bombardier beetle. Now, when he gets close enough, and the bombardier beetle figures it out, he will blow out the one side that has the three compounds, and then immediately blow out the other side, which works on the inhibitor, and now there's an explosion in the face of this particular animal that's fixing to try to eat him. Now, how did that beetle know to do that? Could you imagine Grandpa Beetle Bailey working around in his chemical lab trying to put these chemicals together? Now, he doesn't know what's going to happen, and so he mixes them together and he explodes. How does he tell his son? His notes and everything are blown up with him. Well, you know that that's not the way it happened. God placed within that beetle the instinct to know, and placed within the beetle the design to help him from becoming supper to some prey. But I want you to know something else about this fellow. He has the ability to aim his bomb. He can shoot it to the left. He can shoot it to the right. He can shoot it straight out. And he knows which direction his enemy is coming from. It's no wonder that Dr. E.A. Manis has said, well, let's look at it on chart. I think you'd see it a little bit better if it were on chart. Now, notice what E.A. Manis says on this. If the word God were written on every blowing leaf, embossed on every passing cloud, engraved on every granite rock, the inductive evidence of God in the world would be no stronger than it is. We understand what's being said. We understand that when a painter paints his painting, he puts his signature. He signs it. Now, what is occurring is that this writer is saying, if God were to put his signature on every leaf, on every cloud, on everything that he has designed, it would be no stronger than what we can see today. And so there is strong evidence for the existence of God and the design of God. His name is on everything, whether we can see it spelled or not. Well, turn to Psalm 19, and we'll turn our attention from the beast of the field and the birds of the air, and we'll turn our attention to the skies that go a little bit higher than where the birds fly. The stars speak of God's greatness and His design. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament showeth forth His handiwork. Indeed they do. I want you to notice what astronomer Frederick H. Giles has said. It certainly cannot be denied that the fact of universal design delivers a telling thrust in the direction of God's existence. When you look into that which this astronomer looks into, that is the universe and the universes. There is a telling thing. God created these things. Let's do a little comparison of the sun and the earth. It amazes me as I hear the scientists in the National Geographic explain to me that the core and the inner part of the sun is 20 million degrees. Now, I realize that the sun has to be hot because the radiation and the heat has to travel some 97 million miles to reach the earth and to heat up this earth so that we can live. I'm in Wyoming at this time. And the other day, the temperature got down to somewhere around 10, 15 degrees overnight. But because of the heat of the sun, that 20 million degree furnace that God has created for man, during the day it got up to 60 degrees in Sheridan, Wyoming. That's design. God put that power within the sun. We also understand, pardon me, that if the earth were moved just 10% closer to the sun, we would burn up. But what would happen if we moved it 10% further away from the sun? You guessed it. We would freeze. Now, who put the earth at just the right spot and the right distance from the sun? You're right again. God did. The earth is spinning at its axis at the equator at 1,000 miles per hour. And it's circulating and rotating in its orbit around the sun at 70,000 miles per hour. And the sun and all of its planets are going through the solar system at 600,000 miles per hour. One particular scientist is of the opinion and the thought and the concept, and he's testing the theory, that everything has slowed down. That at one time, the stars went flying through the air at millions of miles per hour. Who did that? Well, God did. And it's a good thing He did it the way that He did it and made the orbit as large as it was, or else we would run into problems yet again. Interesting enough, the Earth is rotating around the sun at just the right area. If in its path it gets off of its path any at all, we would burn up or freeze. Right now, the pathway is about a ninth of an inch off every 18 miles. But let's suppose instead of a ninth of an inch every 19 miles, it gets off by a tenth of an inch in that same distance. The earth would freeze. Well, let's go the other way. Let's suppose that it gets a eighth of an inch off every 18 miles. The earth would burn up. Now, who placed the earth in this 1/9 of an 18-mile difference? Well, God did, because He knew what it took. And He wanted us to see the design that He placed therein. Let's look at the earth's rotation. Let's speed it up. Let's make it twice as fast. Well, it would shorten our seasons and we wouldn't be able to grow food. Let's slow it down then. Let's make it half as fast as it's going right now. If we slowed it down, then our seasons would be too long and we'd lose our crops that way. Well, let's set the earth at a different degree. Right now, it's on its axis at a 23.5. Well, let's set it up where there's a 0 degree. All the water would go to the poles and the middle part would dry up. And again, you can see the problems we would run into. So who placed the earth at just the right angle on its axis? If time were given unto us, we could discuss the black holes. And when we discuss evolution, we may look at those things. It was interesting to see that during the internationally televised Apollo 10 shot, the astronauts in their little machine, their great orbiter, did this. They read, "In the beginning, God." What I'm telling you is you're not alone if you believe in God. You'll recognize and you'll realize that there are more scientists and educated and intelligent men who believe in God than some people are willing to admit. As a matter of fact, 89% of the scientists of NASA that were involved in the Apollo 10 space shot believed in God. Now, you don't hear those types of things, but that's the facts in the case. Famous scientist Wernher von Braun said this. This is one of the greatest scientists that America has ever had to work for her and profit by. He said, "One cannot be exposed to the law and order." Law and order, design, is what he just said. "One cannot be exposed to the law and order of the universe without concluding that there must be a design and purpose behind it all." He goes on to say, "The better we understand the intricacies of the universe and all it harbors, the more reason we have found to marvel at the inherent design upon which it is based." This great scientist has just said there is design, and thus there is a designer. There is that greatness within. The poet Ralph Waldo Emerson put it poetically, "Nature is too thin a stream the glory of the omnipresent God burst through everywhere. Both poet and scientist are exactly right.